We are taping Canada Land live tonight, live from the Bloor Hot Dogs Theater in Toronto. It's a sold-out show. It is our 10th anniversary. Good evening. Ten years in the podcast business. The podcast business is 7 years old. 10 years as a Canadian independent digital news company. That's like a 10-year-old mosquito. It's not supposed to happen. It's a miracle, or it's a freak of nature. Whatever it is, it's worth celebrating tonight, and I'm so glad to be here with you. Holy smokes. How many people here with us tonight help make it happen? Who here is a Canada Land supporter? Thank you. God bless you. Who here is not yet a Canada Land supporter? Who here paid good money to be here and does not appreciate being publicly shamed? Tonight we're here to celebrate you, everyone who makes this happen every week. I am here to celebrate my colleagues. We are here to celebrate this strange thing, this impossibility of what we have collectively pulled off. It's not supposed to happen. I'll say it again. We hear it all the time. No one will pay for news. Facebook has banned news. You cannot share or comment on news in Canada on Facebook or Instagram. The podcast business is in trouble. We hear it again and again. To hell with that. We're here. And to mark this occasion, to mark 10 years of reporting and discussion and investigation and storytelling, my colleagues and I have spent some time combing through our archives, over 1,000 podcasts, to bring you some of our most serious and important work, which we'll be sharing with you tonight. And a content warning, tonight's presentation will include graphic depictions. No. I'm just messing with you. I think we've had enough of the news for a little bit. We're going to celebrate tonight. I got to stop doing stuff like that. We're trying to grow up as a news organization. We're trying to grow up. The organization is doing things I never dreamed it could. My colleagues are just wowing me all the time. We're expanding, we're progressing, we're evolving. What I'd like to start our time together doing tonight is, I don't know, maybe making a clean slate of it and talking about some things from our past, mostly things that I'm responsible for, that I'd sooner forget. But they did happen. So, you know, as journalists, we have to regard this, and then please never mention any of these things again. So, those of you who are here with us tonight, you get to see these things. Those at home can just listen and wonder. The first thing is this. Almost from the beginning, I've been looking for ways to expand our audience. It's always bugged me that there's so many people in this country who might like Canada Land, but they've never heard of Canada Land. So how do we reach them? You know, forget this like old school legacy media advertising. What about like getting really database, you know, demographics, psychographics? Let's build a profile of who our target listener is. And so we imagine that in any household, there's one member of the household who is, you know, most likely to enjoy Canada Land. And so we call this the Lisa Simpson of the household. How do we reach the Lisa Simpson in the house? And I thought, well, what better way than to have Lisa Simpson herself promote Canada Land? Please roll the audio.
Are you listening to Canada Land? It's a podcast about the most interesting stories in your country. Just recently, they dug up the inside details about the firing of Lisa LaFlamme, and they also told an amazing true story about the history of the Sasquatch. You guys live in Canada, and you should be listening to Canada Land.
That is Yardley Smith, the voice actor behind Lisa Simpson. It did not move the needle at all. Moving on. Does anyone remember our book, The Canada Land Guide to Canada, published by Simon & Schuster? What better way to market our podcast than through this widely released, a big publisher? And we thought we had an ace up our sleeve with this cover, Drake just delicately nuzzling, sensually embracing a moose. Just the perfect Canadian image. And I thought, this image is all we need. Who cares what's in the book? This is going to take us far once this image gets out, we can have a breakthrough success in America. I wouldn't be surprised if like late night television in America picks this up. You're laughing at me. I thought it would be good to stir up some controversy. If we could make a bit of a fuss, if we could get people talking, that might sell some books. And so we crafted the following chapter of the book. This would be the centerpiece of the book. We had this chapter, The Canada Land Guide to Canadian Sexuality, illustrated exclusively with pictures of former CBC anchor Peter Mansbridge having sex with himself. Next slide, please. We have an array of alluring positions. The National, the Franklin Expedition. It did not clear legal at Simon & Schuster. All of these efforts failed. And yet, we have an excellent show for you tonight. Commons is here. Canada Land Back is here. Wag the Dug is here. The Backbench, Matea Roach is here. Jen Wong is here. Wait for it.
Hello, Hot Docs. My name is Matea Roach, and I am the host of The Backbench. I was asked as part of this 10th anniversary celebration to facilitate a game show component of the show. But a game show needs not just a host. Famously, game shows are about the contestants much more than the host. And I would like to invite to the stage the hosts of Wag the Dug, Jonathan Goldsby and Allison Smith. The name of this game is going to be Reach for the Sock, because they are going to mark the points that they score with these single Candleland socks that they have on their podiums. Question one. Doug Ford has previously said that he is addicted to which beverage, adding that he can drink about 3 liters of it a day? Allison.
Chocolate milk?
That is correct. He's supporting those dairy farmers. He loves his chocolate milk. All right. It's spooky season. It's October. The Premier has said in the past that he is a fan of 2 horror franchises, one of which began in 1978 and the other in 1980. Name either one.
78 would be Halloween.
Indeed, yes. Good matching of dates. Halloween.
And I guess 80, I'm just guessing 80 is Friday the 13th?
Yes, that's exactly right. All right. Question number 3 in this segment. Before she spread misinformation about public health and the pandemic on social media, Doug Ford's daughter, Krista, had a guest appearance on a short-lived MTV Canada reality show as part of a panel scrutinizing social media addicts. What was the name of this show, may remind you of a Radiohead song? Jonathan.
MTV Creeps.
That is correct. Deep cut knowledge coming to the fore. Question 4 in this segment. Complete the quote from a May 25th Globe and Mail feature about the Fords, referring to Rob Ford. The quote is, Robbie just didn't have the passion for blank. Jonathan?
Business?
So business is incorrect. Allison, are you going to make an attempt?
Oh, wait, I'll lose a point. No.
No? All right. Business was too vague. The answer was labels, referring to the business... referring to the business of the Ford family. Final question in this segment. According to reporting from the Toronto Star in 2021, the Premier uses what refurbished phone, even though it's from 2014? Company name and model. I believe that was Allison in first.
I can only say BlackBerry.
We needed the name and model. Jonathan, do you have the name and model?
BlackBerry Classic.
That is correct.
I owned one of those up until 2018.
Well, I think that that brings us to the end of our game, and we have a winner. That winner is Jonathan with a truly dominant performance. And the prize that you're going to win is a product that our Premier Doug Ford is truly passionate about, and that is a Tim Hortons breakfast sandwich. And as our Premier loves to say, holy Christ, I just swallowed a bee. Thank you so much for watching.
For years now, our offer has been deepened by season after season of our series, Commons. While we're responding to what's happening in news and politics or reporting news stories, Commons has been digging deep into Canada's history, its untold stories, and bringing documentaries, incredibly well-told documentaries, about everything from the dynasties who lord over Canada to our obsession with things like real estate and fossil fuels to looking back at our military efforts in Afghanistan, police brutality. It's an incredible body of work that they've been building in a short period of time. I'm going to give the stage over to the host of Commons, Arshi Mann, in conversation with our editor-in-chief and host of Canada Land Back, Karen Pugliese.
Hey, everybody. So I'm here with Arshi Mann.
So happy to be here.
And we're here to talk shit about cults.
That's right, of course.
So tell me, the next season of Commons, as we saw, is about cults. Just give us a bit of an overview about what that season's about.
Yeah, we wanted to do something that's different from a lot of the kind of true crime shows that you're hearing about cults out there, and really get into kind of what even this term means and what it's meant for Canada over the last 100 years. So we'll be touching on all kinds of things like brainwashing. Is that real? Talking about weird alien religions from the inside. And just really kind of digging into a variety of things, including things that might feel cult-ish but aren't necessarily what you'd call a cult traditionally.
Like, what do we mean by cult-ish?
Things like, say, multi-level marketing or Bitcoin or, you know, a variety of things that, you know, when your friend gets involved, you're like, oh, that's a little bit cultish there. So there's a variety of different things that don't necessarily have a religious element that we think certainly deserve the label.
What does it even mean? Like, how do you separate something that is a cult from something that isn't a cult?
You know, there's a variety of different definitions. It's a big argument in academia. But I think one thing that a lot of folks point to is a charismatic leader. I think that's
a charismatic leader.
Yeah, that's right. Somebody who might have a bit of an ego.
Right.
Somebody, a little bit of a narcissistic personality. I think that's really
centered on themselves.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right? I think that's often kind of one of the fundamental aspects.
Are they critical of others?
I mean, often so, right? You really have to kind of define an us versus them kind of element in order to be, I think, an effective cult leader there.
Fascinating. So I just listened to episode 2. And episode 2 is about Brother 12. Now, I do not want to give much away, but one of the things that really struck me is that people talked about joining this cult largely just because of his voice. Like, that's so interesting.
It's true. I mean, he was a very charismatic speaker, and that drew a lot of people in, but it wasn't just his voice.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, he would often get into these letter-writing arguments in these occult publications with very famous people. You could almost think of it like a precursor to Twitter nowadays. And that was another way in which, you know, Brother 12 built up an audience and really, you know, tried to gain followers.
Interesting. Interesting. So how do they get followers?
Oftentimes, it's by trying to convince them, and this is the main goal, right? It is often to try and get as many followers as you can.
Could we call them supporters?
Sure, you can call them supporters if you like. I don't see a problem with that, you know. And really, the end result there is to try to get money from them, right? Like, these are really financially motivated entities. And so, yeah, I think that's a very important element of it.
So one of the things that you do talk about, you talk to author and expert Amanda Montell about the language of fanaticism.
Yeah, that's right.
What's that about?
So it's a way in which, again, of having a kind of inner language, right, that, wait for it, maybe only insiders would kind of understand, right? And again, it's about drawing that us versus them and being part of the group.
I get that. Duly noted.
So congratulations, happy birthday, it's your 10th. You're scared, right? He's so scared of me. I tweeted out just earlier today, like, what should I ask Jesse? You know, the only person who responded was Jesse. And this is what he told me to ask him. Quote, you're quite impressive. To what do you owe your universal appeal? So?
I mean, that's a complicated question. It's going to take some time.
Okay, never mind. cutting you off. So are you afraid of me? Because this is, I got an email yesterday from one of your staff. And I'm not kidding. They said, while Jesse is comfortable going into the interview without knowing which topics will be covered, he is wondering if there will be anything brought up that he would not want his kids to hear. He is trying to figure out if his kids should attend the event. Can you let me know what you think? And I thought, oh, I had so many X-rated questions. And I had to ditch them all. But I'm still going to ask you about sex and money and power. But the sex part is kind of like sexist questions. Because women always get asked, how do you do all this and still have children? How do you do this? So I thought I would ask you. Right?
Jen Wong, we've spoken many times, usually on my terms in our studio. We've always had these lovely conversations, but I'm terrified of you.
You didn't answer my question.
I did not.
About the children. So if you're not going to answer, I have stuff to ask.
The answer is really simple. I have an incredible, loving, and supportive partner, my wife Katie, who's here tonight. Who launches a media startup?
You.
With two babies.
You would. That's why I'm asking you about fatherhood.
Not without Katie. So she supported it from the start, and it wouldn't have happened without
her. That's all very nice. But
isn't it nice?
No. I don't buy it. So I did a little digging, and it turns out that during COVID, you were going into the office every day. Now, as a mother myself, I would do that too, just to get away from my kids. So was that why you were going into the office, to get away from your lovely children?
I mean, they came in with me a bunch of times, and they had fun, like, on the rolly chairs, and we have, like, good snacks at the office.
No one else was going into the office during COVID. Why were you going into the office?
You answered the question when you asked it.
Okay, I have another fatherhood question. So you were really nice, and you were with your kids, and your wife had to go grocery shopping. So you dropped her off. Do you want to talk about that? And you had the kids in the car. Do you want to talk about that episode?
It's more shameful than how you set it up.
No, well, go ahead. Shame yourself.
I consider myself a supporter of small businesses in Toronto.
Okay.
And I celebrate the vast array of cuisines that we have on offer in the city. The problem is that when you order ahead, you know, sometimes it's waiting for you when you go to pick it up. So Katie was grocery shopping.
What? Yeah, she was doing all the shopping.
So I said, I don't want to wait with the kids in the parking lot. Like, I can make a quick run and pick up. Like, there's the strip mall that Suresh Doss... my friend Suresh has got incredible recommendations. Like, I can go get the food.
She's shopping for groceries, and you're getting food for yourself.
For my family, Jan.
I was told it was only for you.
If I don't introduce everybody to interesting new flavors and build up their spice tolerance, then I have to eat it all myself.
Okay. So the food wasn't ready when you got there. So what did you do with your kids?
There's this idea that kids can't be left in a car.
Okay. That's a quote, right? All right, moving on. Now, at McGill, you staged a fake news story, right? And you actually punked my colleague, Marina Strauss. You created this thing about Chapters taking away the sofas, and I remember when they took them away.
Yeah.
You had a pseudonym. What was your pseudonym? What was your pseudonym?
Have you done your research?
Henry Chinashi.
Chinaski.
Anyway, you got on the front of the Globe and Mail business. So did Marina ever find out she was punked?
Well, yeah, because by that point I was doing it for a humor column in Saturday Night Magazine. So the final stage would be I would write a piece about which media I was able to fool.
Okay. Just to talk about the Canada Land numbers, your revenue is like $811,000 a year. Is that right? No? How much is it? You have 11,000 paying subscribers, right?
Yes. So the amount of, like any, you know, private corporation in this country, our books are not a matter of public record. However, we are transparent about the amount of money we get in from our supporters and how we spend it. So that's sort of the extent of our transparency. Our paid subscription, which the number you gave, I think, is pretty much accurate, is the biggest revenue source we have.
Okay. You have a chief operating officer now. Like, you're in the big time.
He's wonderful.
Yeah. Now, your salary originally was $48,000. What is it now, 10 years later?
I'm not telling.
How much do you get for speaking? I have $5,000, and then you raised it to $7,500, and then nobody wanted to hire you.
Yeah. I don't think you need me here.
No, I need you. Okay. So the last section of this interview is power. I said sex, money, power, so now it's power. You're so powerful that your staff formed a union. Would you like to explain why they felt the need to form a union?
I would never speak for my staff.
No, you don't have to. I want to know why you think.
I can hear Archie's laughter specifically.
They were very nice. The staff were very helpful. And so were some ex-staffers.
I think that among the reasons that I'm aware of them unionizing is why any media workforce or workforce might unionize. I think that it's good for workers to unionize. I think that workers are more powerful when they bargain collectively. And I think in any organization, no matter how well managed...
Why would they need to have a union if you are so wonderful?
I know that they're... Okay, like, yeah, all right. So I think a big thing is that the probability is of any media company that it's going to go out of business. And when media companies go out of business, and we're seeing this now with the Metroland newspapers, where 72 newspapers went out of business, and the first thing we heard is that they're trying to deny those workers their money and their severance. So I think that it's a risky proposition to work in media, and I think that one of the prime motivators is to have guaranteed protections in the event that the company ever does go under. But I don't want to sidestep the question. There were, in the early days of Canada Land, the pay was atrocious.
How much?
Oh, God, the first pay was, Jonathan, you know.
How much, Jonathan? Where's Jonathan?
I mean, I don't know the earliest. I can say, like, 2017, that like, I was the highest paid person. I think I was
making 50. So, yeah, less than 50, quite a bit less than 50 with the first. But I'll say this, the first employees of Canada Land are co-owners of Canada Land, many
yes,
of them.
Yes, they have stock.
Because I couldn't pay more than that. And
yes.
So there was...
But you own most of the stock. You own 70-something percent.
Not quite that much, but if you compare our stock option plan to any other company that offers stock options, I was told by lawyers that I'm an idiot for giving. There are people who had as much as like 5% of the company for basically working for less than I wanted to pay them. But now they are co-owners of the company.
Yes, but you have 100% of voting shares.
That is correct.
Okay, so let me talk about your experience and your time at the CBC. Because there was something interesting that happened there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about it?
There's so many interesting things that happened at
the CBC. I know, I'm like the Chinese police. They go, you yourself know. So I just ask,
yeah.
And you start spilling your guts.
Here's some rope.
Yeah.
Here's some rope.
So you're going to talk about what happened?
I actually don't know which incident you're referring to.
Well, you talk about one, and I'll tell you if it's the one.
What can I tell you?
Everything.
You're like almost out of time, though.
No. Yeah, I have five.
Five minutes.
That's a lifetime on a stage.
Yeah, you know, I think I know which incident you might be referring to, and I'll get into it if you want me to, but I'll say this. I learned how to do this work at the CBC, and I was given two shows to host at the CBC. I was mm-hmm. taught how to make documentaries at the CBC. I was put on national radio at a young and inexperienced age, so... My appreciation for that experience and for the CBC is something that I don't get to express enough. Now,
okay.
What is it you want
He's
me to talk
He's just talking
about?
Word salad. So what I specifically am asking is...
Yes?
Your editor, I don't know what the story was about, but one of your CBC editors said, we need a quote that says XYZ. But she didn't mean for you to go find somebody to say it. She wanted you to report it until somebody accidentally said it.
No.
And so you got a friend to say X, Y, and Z?
Ish. I'll tell you this one. I think it's an interesting media story, but it does bother me still.
It does.
And I don't feel like I'm the one who has anything to hide here, because like this is I don't want to tell the story because it's like it is something that I feel was like I was done dirty a little bit. So this is what happened. My first show at CBC was a show called The Contrarians, a show about unpopular ideas that just might be right. And from its conception, the idea of the show was that I would break up the segments, which would be journalistically reported segments, with little comedy bits. Okay? That's in the pitch document for the show. And there was an episode that was called Multiculturalism Doesn't Work, We Just Eat Each Other's Sandwiches. Right? Yeah, so let's look at this unpopular idea, multiculturalism, you know, and the idea was, I don't necessarily believe these ideas, I'm just trying them on for size. So there were these reported segments of The Contrarians, and in between we'd do comedy bits, like I'd go to like a falafel shop and try to engage people in a debate about who invented hummus, you know? And I would try to get them real, like I'd go into these restaurants and actually try to have these interactions with people, and I was pretty successful. But there was one where I wanted to do a segment where I went into San Francisco Sandwiches, right? And I was playing the fool, and I'm like, can you put this veal parm sandwich in a pita for me? Or like, I'm kind of gluten intolerant, and like trying to get this guy wound up. So be like, we don't do that here. Get out of here. And he did it. He gave me the reaction I wanted, but he wouldn't let me record him.
Oh.
Right? So I was like, damn it. And I was on deadline for a unaired pilot, okay? And I was like, well, I need this segment. So I got my friend to recreate the scene. Okay?
Okay.
And then the pilot, which was not intended for broadcast, was greenlit into a series. Then, like a month later, we're getting ready to air the thing. And I went and I told my colleague, hey, before we air it, I don't think I told anybody this, but that one segment, that's not the real guy.
Okay.
Okay? And she, what?
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah. And it became this whole, like, that's not journalistic. Yeah. And I'm like, well, I told you, but I'm telling you that I did it.
I know it still bothers you.
It still bothers me because years later, when Canada Land was making a lot of noise, and after the Globe and Mail approached me to write a column, which I rejected because I said, I can't cover the Globe and Mail and work for you, they put a reporter on, like, a profile of me. It's the first and only major story that
Simon
any
Haupt.
Canadian newspaper, yeah, it was yeah. Simon Haupt, nobody has done anything of this nature of like, let's do a profile on Canada Land. Yeah. And somebody from my old team anonymously told on me that this had happened. And it was reported in the Globe and Mail that I had faked a scene for a CBC show. I didn't fake anything that aired on the CBC.
It didn't air.
No, it was never aired. I feel like there were people at the CBC who were pretty upset with me. And they were shopping around. I had another reporter come to me and say, somebody from the CBC is trying to get me to write this story about you, but they won't put their name to it. Mm-hmm. And then Simon was given the same information. And I messed up because he came to me and he said, I heard this story about you. And I said, who told you the story? He goes, I have somebody on the record who told the story. And I should have said, who?
You never found out?
Well, here's what happened. Instead of saying who, I said, oh, he's got somebody on the record. So, okay, let me tell you about it. So then I told him my side of it. And he reported it, taking out a lot of the context that I've shared with you, and it came out in the Globe and Mail as I made up a story.
Yeah.
And I said, why is the name of your source not in the story? You told me you had an on-the-record source. And he goes, oh, it was on background. They were.
No, that's not the same.
I said, that's not the same thing. He goes, no, they were on the record, but on background.
Not the same.
And I thought I was done dirty by
that. Yeah, you were.
And that was like 8 years ago.
It still bugs
you. And we're 10 years old now, and we'll read in the news every day about another news organization going under. Yeah. And no one will write a word about Canada Land succeeding for 10 years. So I've still got a little bit pissed off about it.
I'm sorry. I don't want to end on that note.
No, we need something.
I'm ending. I know I'm out of time. And let's see. So tell me about the awards you've won. Are you bitter about We Charity not winning that?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
The Globe and Mail won a national newspaper award for We Charity.
I know.
That's our story.
I know. And what about the Gian Gameschi? Who won that one?
We won the Hillman Prize for investigative reporting for that story.
I mean, you broke real stories. You really committed a public service. I just want to say that. I've been giving you a very hard time.
You have been.
Well, on that note,
on that note.
Thank you very much for being such a good sport.
Thank you. This was your Canada Land show. We hope you enjoyed it.